Welcome to the Motivate Me Book Club. We read and challenge books to motivate us. Follow along as we uncover what may or may not work from these books, provide tools and resources for your goals, and interview people who have found a path to success through their reading. Join us to kick ass at achieving your goals faster and easier than before, one book at a time. Motivate Me Book Club is here to motivate you. Hey everybody, hope you're having a great day so far. It is a pretty balmy, hot summer's day here in Tallahassee, Florida, as I'm on business out in the panhandle in a different area than I live, but recording from hotels seems to be my new jam. And it also helps to always kind of put yourself in a different environment and see how well you function and see how productive you can still be. And I'm finding that I actually like the change of scenery. And although a hotel room might not seem super conducive, it can provide a pretty interesting sound space and studio for podcast recording. I've got pillows set up all over to balance the sound and prevent as much echo as possible. So if there is some background noise, it's probably from trucks and cars across the street. And we'll see how much that gets picked up. But anyways, getting on with business, we are reading The One Thing by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. How is it going for you? Have you finished it yet? Are you still reading or maybe listening to an audio copy? To me, this book has really spoken and reinforced my commitment to myself that I need to have singular focus in the different areas of interest that I have for my success, my personal, professional, my lifestyle that I'm working towards. And last episode, we interviewed Luke and talked to him about his goals, a little why check-in, and how the concept of the one thing could work for him. He brought up some really good ideas, and if you didn't have a chance to hear that interview, I definitely recommend going back and checking them out, and also going back to some of the other episodes where we talk about the one thing. What this episode is meant to do is give you an introduction to the book so that if you are inspired and you think it really relates to your situation, you can then divulge into it further by getting a copy for yourself. And I from reading this over and doing it from the hard copy, I really think this one is about the hard copy, and an audiobook would not do it justice. There are a lot of visuals and diagrams that speak to all kinds of learning styles. If you're a audio, visual, verbal, if you have maybe a tendency to be more visual or verbal, then definitely reading and looking at the pictures, the diagrams will really work for you. However, if you are an audio learner, then you would have to obviously go for that audio version. And if you don't know what kind of learning style you are, then I highly suggest taking a learning little quiz to find out what your best learning style is. For me, I am a visual and kinesthetic learner. So for me, I have to look at the diagrams, and if there is something more visual that I can get a sense of the concept from, then I do better. And kinesthetic is a doing. It's an actual action type of learning. So by experiencing and physically acting out something, I end up retaining information a lot better. And one of the best ways to do that, since we don't retain too much information from different ways that we learn, is to teach others and to spread that awareness. So a cool thing that I suggest for anybody who, regardless if you're listening or reading or watching a YouTube video overview or anything like that, is to tell somebody about something cool that you learned, and you're more likely to then remember it. All right, the one thing. This is a great way to just reduce distractions and declutter and to just let go of things that are getting in the way. The one thing is described as the surprisingly simple truth behind extraordinary results. The book discusses the value of simplifying one's workload by focusing on the one most important task in any given project. a real key part of that is that it doesn't mean you only have one thing at all to work on. Because realistically, our lives are full of many, 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 many things. And a lot of it is out of our control. A lot of it is situational. A lot of it is just our time and place at the moment, which is different than where we were 5 years ago, which is different than where we probably will be in 5 years from now. But we have a lot of going on that at the same time is part of the decisions and the choices we've made have led us to here. So what we need to do is make good choices and decisions as we move forward so that we get closer to where we want to be. And enjoying that journey on the way is part of that success, because that point in the future doesn't end. It continues on. There's a place to go from there to the next 5 years, to the next 10 years, to the ultimate goal that you have for your life vision. Let's break it back down. Let's bring it to present time and understand that one thing could be a few one things when it comes to what we need to focus our time on. The areas of interest that I introduced a few episodes back were to help our habits support a bigger goal. And without even knowing that this book would relate to that, I had developed the habit tracker. And that's to account and really notice a trend in how habits work for us and understand a bigger why to why we're doing them. Because saying that you want to read daily is great, but why do you want to read is a better question to answer. Well, for me, I want to read or listen to a podcast on a daily basis so that I'm creating personal development on a regular, habitual way, and that I'm always seeking out that information, that my brain wants that stimulus to be curious and to then think, huh, how could that work for me? And then go from there with an action. So the habit tracker lines up a lot with the one thing, because the book also provides a habit tracker too. The whole idea of having habits is to work on the domino effect. And that's the first principle that's brought into this book, is that by working hard on one singular thing, that first domino in a big long stack or big long row of them, once we knock down that first domino, it puts in motion a chain reaction of events, and that one domino sends energy forward, knocking over the subsequent domino, which knocks over the following domino, and so on and so forth. So if we can work on one thing that sets a whole chain of reactions in our lives to then succeed or get to where we need to go better and faster and quicker, then we're putting our energy in the right direction in the most efficient way. If we spread ourselves out, if we try to do too much and try to hit a domino much further forward without the ones prior to it, it's a bigger feat because there are those other ones that have lined up in front of it. So if you just take this analogy at that level, you can see how knocking over the first domino creates that effect that knocks down all the rest. And that is the basic concept. So why do we not do this? In The One Thing, Gary Keller and Jay Papasan introduce the lies that we are fed over time that isn't really our fault, it's just a cultural way of thinking that suggests that this may not be an effective way, that there are other ways. But with the examples that they provide, the six lies that we have derail us from focusing and from having a singular thing to work on. All right, the lies that mislead and derail us, and the truth about the simple path to productivity is about the focusing question. What's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? Think about your one thing, a big picture goal that you have for yourself. Again, more than one thing might exist for you in different areas of interest, but what is one of those things that you just ultimately want to have happen? Okay, and then that's the big picture. So then the small focus that helps you to get there is the one thing that you can do right now such that by doing it, it puts everything else in the motion and gets to that big picture. That is the key. So focusing question is a big picture map and a small focus compass. I love this. It's figure 15, page 107 of the book, and it's right as the focusing question is introduced. It has that visual, and it really is so simple. But what we need is a guiding direction to go in, and that while we hammer away at that, we'll knock down that domino and create a trail of success as it moves forward, because that is then going to put everything else in motion to achieve our desired results. From this is how we develop successful habits. Those are the things that we should be doing automatically on a daily basis, that everything becomes easier and everything works faster and more efficiently for us in our daily basis. And we only can do that if we commit to it and track ourselves so that we have that personal accountability. What I like to think of this is there could be even a more pivotal keystone habit in our lives that can be identified as the single one that if we work at more so will influence all areas of interest in our lives. This goes back to the power of habit. So for that book, you know, that to me is one that I still think of, because one of the things that I've quickly come up with and have had so many discussions on is that habits equal success. Successful habits are the ones that create the best results. And in Charles Duhigg's Power of Habit, he says that by focusing on a keystone habit, we can change everything else. We can break the loops, the patterns, and satisfy all those cravings, and therefore, you know, drive ourselves to do different things in place of those bad habits from before. Because just thinking to acquiring these by doing these daily habits, we need to know the goal in mind. We need to know that big why that we personally desire. But then we also need to understand that we have habits in place already ingrained in our mental pathways that cannot be broken. They can simply be replaced. And we can replace it with something big or something small, so that at least when a trigger occurs, that we have a much more productive and positive action that comes through instead of some of these old bad habits that we may possess. So identifying a keystone habit would take a lot more time and effort, but I think it could be very much worth it. And when I was looking at some of the examples from The Power of Habit, especially the one that they introduced right of the way, the example, the lady who really just flipped her life around all to stop smoking, because that was the bad habit that she identified, that if she stopped smoking and she started running so that she could run a marathon, all the other bad habits started to drop off because they were replaced with other habits that supported this change. So the keystone habit was to work on her exercise for her physical health. And what's also quite interesting is that with the part three of this book, it introduces some other concepts that support that working out, working on our physical well-being, can be one of the biggest drivers for all the areas, at least a really good supportive component. Part three is, I think, where the secret sauce is to this book. I don't want to give everything away because I feel that the book itself has so much to offer in its depth and its detail. It has so many great quotes and visuals and diagrams and exercises to help you get through to where you should be in that vision for yourself to then develop really good habits through the focusing question. And a lot of that is supported in this third chapter about extraordinary results. What you can look at is the overview of it and see for yourself how it can apply to you. The basis for all of this is that you're trying to do something great. You have these areas that you're trying to work towards. The one thing is supporting something big. And you've set this for yourself. This is a personal goal, a professional goal. It's a lifestyle goal. It's a environmental goal. It could be whatever you want, but you are doing this. You have set yourself the target. So it's all on you to achieve it. It's on nobody else. Nobody's put this expectation on you. You might have expectations from your work. You might have expectations from your spouse. But your expectations for everything in your life are your own. You have your own expectations for how you are going to show up for work. You have your own expectations of how you're going to show up for your spouse. So these goals that we have to come from a real deep ingrained sense of why. This again goes back to another book we had on the Motivate Move book club. We had The Start With Why by Simon Sinek, and that goes into a deeper understanding of our brain and a sense of purpose. And that's one of the first parts of The Extraordinary Results that the authors introduce. They say that you have to live through purpose. They also say you have to live through priority. And then they say you have to live for productivity. I agree with this, and if you get into the book or if you get into the audiobook, it'll explore that a little bit further. So I think that's an area for the book to reveal itself to you. But what helps, which is not, how should I say this? It's not your excuse. It's not a reason, but it's the support and the reinforcement of yourself that this is okay to do. This all can come down to seeming pretty selfish and self-serving by saying, hey, this is my one thing and this is what I'm going to focus on and everything else can wait because I can't multitask because that's a lie. I can't, be disciplined because that's not realistic. We have all these lies that we now know aren't going to help us get anywhere because they don't support the single focus, and that the single focus means that other things are going to have to wait, that there's going to be other things on the side. Well, this helps support you in that it's okay. You're not doing harm to anyone. You're not causing anyone grief by doing this. In fact, you're going to be more helpful and more supportive and more available to do what other people want of you because you're making your own life easier and everything is set on your terms. The areas that this book has really opened up to the reader are the commitments that you need to make to yourself in order to be able to focus on your one thing, and recognizing the four thieves that steal your time and energy away from focusing on what you find the most important. The three commitments to your one thing is follow the path of mastery. The second one is move from entrepreneurial to purposeful. And the third one is to live the accountability cycle. So for the first one, when you see mastery as a path you go down instead of a destination you arrive at it, it starts to feel accessible and attainable. The path is the key. And I've always said this. It's not about the goal or the destination. It's about the journey that it takes to get there. That is what you enjoy. That is what you live in. The moment as it occurs is a snap of time. And unless we really give ourselves that reflection or that savoring of that moment where success has happened, it is a fleeting moment. And it's all about the effort that you have put into it ahead of it that really is your commitment. And so you need to enjoy it as it goes. It doesn't mean it's always going to be pleasurable or happy, but you need to embrace everything that comes with that. I really like the second one, that moving from entrepreneurial to purposeful, or from moving from E to P as it is. The path of mastering something is the combination of not only doing the best you can do at it, but also doing it at the best it can be done. So entrepreneurial is our natural approach. It's when we get up and we kind of race off to do everything, and our natural abilities are just, you know, doing it at the area that we are comfortable in. But highly productive people don't accept the limitations of their natural approach as the final word for their success. If they hit the highest level that they can naturally, well, they have to go back and figure out a different way of doing it than maybe what is just able to be done. To be creative, to seek help, to ask questions, to be curious of what other possibilities are there. So the whole thing about going from E to P is pushing the limits of your comfort zone to live in that discomfort, because that's where we grow out of, is an area of discomfort. We're not good there. We don't want to stay there. So the most successful people in what I've read and who I've talked to have come from a place that they didn't want to be in. And that's where they had to really jump up and out and gain the most traction and the most success, really. And then that third point about accountability is what everybody has always said. If you have an accountability partner, that's where you're going to hold yourself to it. Because it's not always easy to do it to ourselves. I think my biggest thing is to speak it out loud. And I've had a few conversations recently with others about their goals. And we're always so protective of it to not be willing to share what we really want from life, so that we keep it internalized, and therefore we're only talking about it to ourselves, but we're not sharing it and keeping ourselves accountable through others. So finding maybe your own accountability first won't be so easy as it is to find someone to help keep you accountable. Accountable people achieve results others only dream of. And the final area of this book, the third part of Extraordinary Results, discusses the four thieves of your productivity, of actually getting results done, of actually hitting down that first domino, of getting in the way of your habits. I've tracked my habits this month with my new Motivate Me Book Club habit tracker, and it's over halfway, and it's been telling. It's something that I wrote down little notes like, oh, I was away for this week and I had these people around on these few days, and it looked, and I just wanted to see if there was any correlation, not necessarily causation, because again, nobody causes me to act or do anything. It's my control over my situation, and I've chosen, because other things have been around, that some of the habits that I want to do didn't happen. So for me to look at this, it really shows that there are thieves of productivity, that there are things that get in the way, and it comes down to my choices that I've made. The one that I agree with out of what the author suggests is the inability to say no. Similar to when I visualize I'm going to read or listen to a podcast, if I choose to have a conversation with somebody instead, and even though my brain isn't in the conversation, I'm thinking that, oh my gosh, I really want to be reading right now. This is my time. This is what I had visualized. It's because I didn't say no to the conversation. Sure, that conversation could have been great. It could have helped with something else with that person. But if you can't say no, then what you're saying yes must be defended over time by 1,000 no's. I didn't understand that, but I think that's an interesting point. It's one thing to be distracted when you're trying to focus, but it's entirely different to be hijacked before you even get to. When you say yes to something, you have to understand really clearly what it is you're saying no to. And so because I said yes to the conversation, what I said no to was my personal development time. I said no to my own personal development to increase my business acumen and intellectual skills for making money and producing my business sooner than later. And although it seems kind of like it might be trivial by that one little conversation, it really did, because it was a day that I missed that I won't get back. And what this book is saying is that if you do say yes to something that takes away from your time that is super precious, the time blocking like what Luke does, then you've given it away and you haven't protected it. So you really do need to give it back to yourself and realize that if you have said yes and said no to yourself, if you've made that choice, that it is on you, that ownership, to then come back and give that back to you. So something else will have to give. It's all a give and take, and it's all about working in that moment and what's the most important, living with priority. So I feel that, you know, I've been better at saying no over time, and it's not selfish. It's about making what your priority is truly a priority. So this next part is really interesting because it's about the fear of chaos. And what this really relates to is the fact that there are a lot of things going on in a person's life. And even though you may time block and say, this is okay, when I'm going to do my successful work, this is where I'm going to have all my habits that I'm working on. I'm going to, you know, do the reading, I'm going to do the studying, I'm going to do the research, whatever it is that daily habit that is part of the imperative part of what you're working on, it might have to happen with things going on around you. So the time blocking concept is introduced into the book. And again, that's in that three part of live for purpose, live for priority, live in productivity that I want you to go into on your own if this is where you think this book will help you. And they talk about time blocking, and that was Luke's strategy. And I'm trying to adopt this as well. But what happens is that there might be kids or parents or spouses or friends or people that are in your lives that have influence on your time. So your time block, although the best suggested time of day is first thing for 4 hours, might not be possible right away until you start shifting things around. So what the authors, what Gary says when he teaches this, is that you have to work things around what is available to you and what is realistic. If you have to beg, then beg. If you have to barter, then barter. If you have to be creative, you have to be creative. If you have to say to your kids, hey, you got to do this while I do this, and you get your time block broken up into half an hour increments spread out through the day because that's the only way you can do it, over time, it'll get to a point where you, because of your success that you are obtaining from having time blocks in the first place, you will get to it where your schedule is yours to control and that these other factors become easier or they aren't even factors anymore. Your time will be your own. So it's not like this happens overnight. It's a shift. And we all have to start in the situation we're at right now, and it probably is not conducive to having a 4-hour time block first thing in the morning. But hopefully it will get there. And that's why having a default schedule like what Luke and I work on is a really good way to help, because it helps you jump back in when things go off kilter, when it goes off the rails or off track. You have something to jump back into. And if you have time blocking throughout your default schedule, you'll have an opportunity to come back and focus on your single task, your single thing, the one thing that is important to you. And don't worry if other things get left half done, those other priorities that, you know, not everything is created equally. I love this quote that they put into the book, and it helps kind of reinforce how much disarray I feel like I personally have. But Albert Einstein said it perfectly. If a cluttered desk is a sign of a cluttered mind, of what then is an empty desk a sign? So it's better to have chaos. It's better to have things just happen all around, because that means that there's something good going on too. If there's nothing going on, if everything's fine, well, then you're probably not working at anything. You know, there's never going to be a time when there isn't something else on standby as you work on your one thing. Third thief of productivity is having poor health habits. And the fourth one is having an environment that doesn't support your goals. I think these two go hand in hand. They're not mutually exclusive or completely related, but I do think that one does help support the other. And poor health habits can obviously be the way you eat and the way you exercise. And because I've seen this in other books and a lot of the ones that talk about healthy or habits that create an extraordinary lifestyle, or the habits of seven habits of highly effective people from the last book that we read, all of them suggest that working on your physical and mental well-being are some of the foundational habits that lead to all of it. And I'm almost positively certain that is the keystone habit. That I think that if we eat right, if we feel good on the inside, if we exercise and we have those endorphins and those serotonin levels running through us, we are more likely to be successful and have everything else happen for us. So I would love to see a lot more research done on this, and If you know any other books that divulge further into the science of exercise and the habit of exercise, let me know, because I would love to read that, and I'm sure a lot more of the book club members would too. But I've seen it now in this book, and that by having better health habits, you're more likely to do better things. And then the environment supporting your goals is 100% true, and this is one that I've tried to create a better environment for myself and Luke. I know that we can just hang out and have fun and nothing else will happen. We are best friends through and through, and our relationship is really great, but we can let everything else stand on pause, and that creates that chaos, and it doesn't support our goals moving forward. Sometimes when I look at my habit tracker, I'll be like, okay, well, how come this didn't happen? And I'm like, oh, because, well, we went to the movies and we went on a date and had some drinks, and, you know, that's that. That's when I was going to do this, but I didn't protect my time block. I let this happen. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, that means that my relationship is flourishing and it's really like enjoyable, but they say even too much of a good thing can be bad. So it's about creating a supportive environment. And I know that he and I have to do that with ourselves. So I pitched that on Tuesday nights and Wednesday nights, we figure out what we can work on for ourselves, for our goals, and make those like our personal goal nights. And we won't ever really just even spontaneously try to overlap anything unless it can somehow support our goals in a bigger way than what we're working at. Like maybe it's a domino pusher, it's a catalyst for more momentum, or another part of our goals. Whatever that is, that's like the exception to the rule. But what I've tried to figure out is a way that we can both be productive by setting ourselves up for that supportive environment where we both work on what we need to, so that our relationship isn't guiltily in the way of it. Because although it's great, you know, we do have date night every week. We do have time that we look forward to, our trips that we plan together. We still make time for us all the time, but we don't need to overindulge and get in the way of time blocking, because that isn't that support. So you take this for what it is, look at it through the lens of your own life, and see what kind of things can you do for your commitments to your one thing. And also try to identify if you have any of these thieves of productivity. It'll be surprising what kind of choices you have to make, but that is ultimately for you to decide. Every choice is yours, and there will be an outcome, there will be a result, which puts things into motion. And from there, you're going to have to make more decisions and more choices, and where you want to be is just a sequence of them. So stick to what you want, stick to your choices, stick to your gut, what you believe in. Because that one thing that you're working on is potentially your pathway to success. The biggest takeaway from this is that focus equals progress. When you hit the first domino down, everything else will fall over into place as well. So what do you think? Is this something that can work for you? Can you extract the one thing and apply it to your life? This principle of having a focusing question that guides and directs your effort so that you can knock down one domino to set everything else in motion. Is that something that you can do and apply over the next month? See how it goes. I'm going to apply this too. The habit tracker is one way to do so. And if it takes 66 days to really apply a habit, it looks like we should check in over several times. But the good thing is, habits seem to be a common theme throughout all these books for success. So as we keep going, we're going to check in on our habits and find out how much those are working for us, as well as these books. This has been the Motivate Me Book Club, presented by Pineapple Gin. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Click the subscribe button to get the latest episode as it lands. Leave a rating, review, or comment to help us out, and share with friends the podcast, the book club, or even parts of the books that helped you. Motivate Me Book Club is here to motivate you.